Hi, this is Joe Francica, Editor-in-Chief and Vice Publisher of Directions Media. We'd like to welcome you to our Directions Media Editorial Roundtable, in which we'll discuss topics that occurred over the 2006 period, what we think may happen in 2007. I'm joined by my editorial team, Adina Schutzberg, Executive Editor of Directions Magazine, Nora Parker, Senior Managing Editor of Directions, Hal Reed, one of our senior editors of Directions Magazine and Location Intelligence, and Dave Williams, the editor of LBS360.net and also associate publisher. I'd like to remind everyone that today's broadcast is sponsored by the Location Intelligence Conference. Please join us on the 16th to the 18th of April in San Francisco at the Park 55 Hotel. Learn how to save or make money from implementing this technology within your company. For details, please go to www.locationintelligence.net. Early registration is now open. We have a number of topics we'd like to talk about, all of which we believe have some significance that occurred in the year 2006 and what their impact may be for 2007. We'll open up the discussion with my executive editor, Adina Schutzberg. She's going to comment on some of the things that we saw in the mashup community this year. Adina?
I think what we're seeing here in 2006, in contrast to what we saw in 2005 in the mashup world, was that we've sort of gone beyond this idea of dots on the map. And I don't mean to belittle that kind of mapping is terribly important. But what we're really seeing is sort of the next step, and maybe you could call it mashups 2.0, or maybe it's 3.0. And really what's happening is now there's more visualization, there's more modeling, there's more tools to work with the new web-based tools. So it's, in a sense, a whole lot more like GIS. So just to give some examples, everybody got very excited about Zillow and its mapping website that also shows house values. And it's built on a model, and there's a whole bunch of data being crunched in the back end. And that's really quite an advanced kind of use. That's much more like something you might do with a GIS. Fortius One offers tools now that allow you to use heat maps and other kinds of thematics built on top of and in conjunction with some of the new online mapping tools. And finally, we're seeing real mashups, ones that are being used regularly here in Boston. Our MBTA, our public transit authority, now has not one but two mashups that allow you to figure out how to get from place to place. So there's a real change happening in what we originally thought of as these sort of small-time mashups.
Yeah, one of the things that I wanted to comment on was that finally we're getting to see some of these mashups being monetized. You know, everybody's looking to the Google model to see how people are going to make money at this. I think what we're finally seeing is some of the you know, people coming out with real-life companies, real-life business models in at a time when, you know, like you say, we're getting beyond the whiz-bang feature of the mashup. Okay, the next topic we're going to discuss that is something that I want to comment on is open source. We saw the open source community this year come into being with the creation of the open source geospatial consortium, OSGEO. There were several events that occurred this year, kind of spurred on by the announcement that Autodesk had put MapGuide into open source, that SRC has put their geocoder into open source, and we had a number of articles this past year that commented on what the potential impact of open source. I think open source has already had an impact. I think the impact is very clear. Open source is creating alternative business models for software service providers. We see this in BM Solutions, an entire company that's really going out there and trying to take open source technology, using their consulting services to bring real-life solutions to their clients. So I think this business model will continue. I think it's going to be hard for other traditional software companies not to put some things into open source and to perhaps take this next step into providing services. Many of the GIS companies, MapInfo and Intergraph, for example, you know, and Autodesk started consulting groups. I think open source technologies is going to be another way for them to try to make money with their integration service.
I think that's true, and I think the other sign of this that we need to look at is not only are there sort of pure play open source companies like DM, but we're also seeing an awful lot more little trickles of the more traditional part of our industry picking up an ear and getting involved. So, for example, ESRI is involved in supporting some open source work through 52 Degrees North, a consortium out of Europe. And we're noticing that more and more software, which in the past had taken advantage of open source, is now sort of more publicly known. For example, that Goodle, one of the key open source libraries, pretty much every piece of commercial software. But now we sort of know that it's not sort of hidden anymore. And I think that in a sense, open source is coming out of the closet.
What do you think the impact will be on enterprise computing? Is this a way for location technology to get more and deeper into the enterprise?
It certainly can't hurt. More and more enterprise IT shops, they've been using open source and things like Apache for years. So the more that's out there and the more that gets sort of the votes of the community by having lots of support and lots of updates and keeping things fresh, those are the kinds of packages they're going to keep an eye on. So, I think that will have an impact.
This is Nora. I think that it's going to continue to be a bit of a battle on trying to get, you know, more organizations, government organizations, private organizations to want to adopt open source. And, you know, there's no question that a lot of folks out there are questioning about the support. Now, we know very well that the open source community is addressing these concerns, but it's going to take time.
Hi, this is Hal. One of the things I noticed this year was, of course, is what I would call the increased mobilization of the workforce. And I think the symptoms of that is almost everybody has gotten an email that has a tagline on it that it was generated from a BlackBerry device or something else. I think what's happening is that we're kind of pushing things further and further down to the field for mobile access. For example, you know, we've all got, somebody's got some way of navigating, you know, on their phone or their PDA. We've got real-time traffic coming down from NRECs and other people and so on. It's getting to the point because everybody's phone has a wireless browser on it that you can get to your corporate database and ask some simple questions. Companies like Thetis and other people are condensing the query into a kind of a canned search that allows you to go to your corporate database and say, all right, I'm here at wherever you happen to be in the field, and you need information on this particular location, and here it comes. I think that kind of puts the laptop as your base station, and your smartphone becomes your tactical resource.
Yeah, I think this really touches on one particular issue that in our articles this year, which is we've got a mobile workforce. We're all looking for the next application that we're going to carry around in our pocket. This speaks directly to all of the location-based services applications that some of the telecommunication carriers are bringing out now. So you've not only got a mobile workforce out there who are communicating remotely, but now they're looking for other types of applications that they can utilize with a location-based service.
Hi, this is Dave Williams. Just to add on to that, we recently did a survey or participated in a survey that looked at the adoption of mobile field force, mobile resource management types of applications. And it really is growing significantly as businesses really start to recognize the business value and are able to cleanly develop a compelling business case to adopt those services. So it's moving further and further down into the workforce on a variety of aspects that just seems like it will continue to grow robustly in the near future.
One of the topics that seems to continually come up is, and looking historically to it, at the applications of GIS in particular in businesses, is GIS and is location technology making an impact at the enterprise level? Nora?
Thanks, Joe. That's something that we've been wondering about for 15 or 20 years. How well penetrated is geospatial technology in business? And I think that clearly geospatial technologies are making a difference in business, but it's not universally accepted, and its adoption rate varies based on a lot of variables, including regulatory pressure, competitive pressure, availability of pertinent data, et cetera. These tend to vary based on industry. There are a lot of anecdotal examples of sophisticated use of geospatial technology in just about every sector of business. We were involved in some research with the Aberdeen Group this year, which Sumer Duda reported on, his findings indicate that 70% of users can provide enhanced data for routing and scheduling, and the cost savings are significant. We also published an article researched by the Yankee Group that they talk about the location intelligent companies that use geospatial technology in a variety of operations, including customer acquisition, risk management, supply chain collaboration, and customer service. An application that we heard about this week in an article that Hal did was an interview with Rod Piper of Barnes Bank, a small bank in Utah with 10 branches that was expanding. And, you know, even a fairly small bank was using geospatial technologies in a very sophisticated way to enter new markets and mitigate risk, using technology in a way that had been only available to the big guys in the past. I would guess we're somewhere between early adopters and early majority. But then all of a sudden you get a refreshing new perspective that we might still be earlier in that curve than we realized. There was an editorial that Hal wrote in November titled Becoming New Again, and he was talking in there about an interview that he had heard where there were some gushing undertones about this great new stuff. The bulk of the growth is yet to come.
This is Hal. I think that we have a real interesting opportunity in that area, because I was quite surprised at these folks who had not been in the game as long as we had and were totally pumped up about the technology. So it seems like there's a new crew coming in here and a new opportunity for us to address them as well.
One of the things that has popped up in particular recently are some of the applications, location-based services. I know Dave Williams has some comments on that. Dave?
There's interesting developments in the area of off-deck applications. On-deck LBS applications refer to those that are essentially approved by and as well as potentially marketed by carriers themselves and utilize the carrier's infrastructure in order to get the location information necessary to enable those applications. But there's a growing development in the area of off-deck applications, which essentially is downloading LBS applications directly to the user's cell phone, similar to downloading ringtones. And the reasons for that are multifaceted, ranging everything from wanting to have total control over their business model and not have the carriers cut into it, or provide a different direct-to-market retail strategy as opposed to going through the carriers. But really the biggest driver is the difficulty that many developers are encountering in terms of working with carriers to get their location applications to market. And the carriers are difficult to work with, I guess is one way of saying it, not because they're just necessarily ornery or anything like that, but they have a lot of concerns. They want to make sure that their users' privacy is protected, that there's no misuse of location information in any way, shape, or form, as well as having concerns around legal aspects of having location-based applications on their deck that somehow are used or abused, that in turn could result in litigation. And so they're pursuing off-deck applications, whereas they basically tap directly into the GPS-enabled infrastructure within the device itself and bypasses the carriers themselves, and thus able to get to market without having the entire hurdles associated with trying to work with the carriers to get their applications deployed.
This is Hal. Dave, the interesting thing too, you talked about dealing with the carriers and how difficult that is because of all the stringent requirements, et cetera, and so on. But as a developer, I would think that dealing with all the different operating systems on phones has got to be another heartburn as well. It kind of, when you were talking about this, it reminded me of the early days of computing. Did you write for CPM, or did you write for DOS, or did you write for TRIS-DOS, or what did you do? And I would think that's got to be another challenge as well.
During 2006, we saw an awful lot of acquisitions, data companies buying other data companies, major software companies buying smaller companies, lots of movement in the industry, some consolidation, some expansion. Dina, can you fill us in on that?
There were lots of acquisitions, and some of the most interesting, I think, have to do with the companies that I consider to be the data companies. And just to be clear, those include not only the big players who sell data, the Navtechs and Teleatlases of the world, but also in my mind the GPS companies, because basically they sell devices to create data. So the Garmins and the Trimbles of the world as well. If you take a look at some of those acquisitions, you get the sense that the data companies are heading more and more toward data. So, for example, Garmin recently purchased a company called Dynastream Innovations. What do? They make personal monitoring technology, so foot pads and heart rate monitors for sports and such, which is basically another set of data, right, that you can then do things with. Navtech, in the last 2 months, has had two significant acquisitions, acquiring Traffic.com, which is basically a data company. I mean, it's real-time usable data, traffic information, and also bought a local mapping company, the Map Company, which does maps for shows and trade shows and local events. So I think there's a whole trend going on there, and I think I have to add into that the news that just happened today, which is that Navigon acquired Navtech's navigation software business. So in a sense, they're getting out of the software and focusing more in on the data.
Yeah, this is really an interesting situation, and the way I see it is here's an area where I see this convergence coming in. The data suppliers are buying either more data or, for example, they may be buying into real-time data companies like Navtech did with Traffic.com. The major companies like, you know, Microsoft and Google got to be looking at real-time data to support what they're trying to do in their web portals. The GIS companies are looking at, well, my traditional data suppliers like Navtech and TeleAtlas are kind of going off in a little different direction here. What do I do in this area? So, you know, we're seeing some real divergent movements in the industry that everybody is now positioning themselves in a slightly different way. Some of it is very consumer-oriented in their applications. I think what I'd like to see more of is, you know, what's the enterprise guys going to do? How are they going to take advantage of some of the real-time apps?
This is Dave. Yes, the move to dynamic content, as the data providers refer to it, is definitely something that is high on their strategic priority list. You could argue that static data, you know, whether it's main roads or what have you, has a fixed element to it, meaning it doesn't have to be updated that much and therefore is potentially more easily replicable by competitors than others. And so where they're wanting to essentially establish more of a strategic competitive advantage is in the dynamic content, whether it's traffic information, weather information, other areas that may have very frequently changing type information, whether it's in tying that information to other kinds of applications, traditional applications, navigation, and more value-added service.
I think there certainly will be a place for the dynamic data and what you're referring to as static data. The interesting question then becomes, who owns that stuff? So should we be expecting a big company, like Microsoft or a Google, to be going out and acquiring data companies? They haven't really yet, unless you think of Google acquiring SketchUp, and SketchUp is a tool to make data. But they haven't gone out and bought, a Digital Globe or something like that, or their own satellite. That's not to say that they're not collecting data yet, but they haven't really acquired those kind of companies. So it'll be interesting to watch.
Well, I think you're right on there, Dean. I think somebody's going to buy a satellite company or start their own or do something. I think that's where the next possibility is for data capture. Somebody wants that real-time satellite imagery over Baghdad because they want to see troop movements or something like that. I got to believe that's got to be coming next. One of the things that I would like to discuss are what I saw throughout the year was the introduction of more emphasis on 3D modeling and making it smart, making it integrate with GIS technology. Late last December in 2005, we saw the acquisition of GeoTango by Microsoft. This year, we saw Google buying SketchUp, Autodesk putting more emphasis on their 3D Max technology, the Open Geospatial Consortium putting CityGML out there for comment. These developments are all pointing to the fact that 3D is now becoming a much more recognized software element, other than just a pretty picture, that it has to be a much more useful element in constructing spatial data. So you want buildings to be smart. You want to be able to know their lat long and elevation, just as you would any other, you know, point of reference on a map. So whether you're rendering buildings, you know, for to make the pretty picture, or whether you're doing it for a model, for a viewshed analysis, for a homeland security application, those elements have to be somehow recognized spatially and make smart so that they can be referenced with other ancillary information. Where's the Coke machine on the third floor so that I can refill that so that my inventory can be properly stocked in the truck? I mean, it's that whole, that's actually kind of a long tail of the supply chain. So this is how I see 3D models coming into play more in 2007.
This is how it seems to me, too, that we've sort of reached a point where that computer horsepower to generate 3D and so on is no longer an issue, and storage is no longer an issue. So the ability to portray the world on the screen closer to what it really is certainly something that I think we'll see in a few years. That's just an expected. You would not expect to see it 2D. It's like black and white television. I think the other applications of this is use in measuring, you know, the routes for fuel economy and things like that, because you can anticipate the slope and there's another way to go. It may be an alternative to save you money and make things more efficient.
Another perspective on that, this is Nora, and that series of articles that Gary Smith wrote, one or two people chimed up and said, I'm good with 2D.
Let me introduce another topic that has come into play, and that's increased data granularity. Hal's going to comment on that.
I think it's really interesting when we look at the stuff that's available that just wasn't available a few years ago. I think in terms of high-quality street center lines and related files such as the NavTech parcel files. So now we can geocode at even higher accuracy rates and develop even more granular consumer information. I think that it's the whole data thing, as we talked about just a few minutes ago, is interesting from another aspect, and that's the ability to rummage around and get what you really want out of it. The perception of data is different, because now we don't see it as tabular, we see it as imagery and other things, and so you see things like Pixlogic, for example, doing real-time extraction or matching from video streaming and things like this, just incredible things that are done with data. We had an article here recently about Thetis and Accenture and so on doing some other captures from databases and hardware to extract it, you know, 5 gigabits a second and so on out of the database. Really, really interesting things. Other gizmos, you know, such as Smart Who Is from Tamos that allows you to find, you know, where is the IP address that just hit your site, so you can map that and this sort of thing. I think that the granularity is to the point where it's probably going to touch on some of the things that Dave talked about and Joe as well about individual privacy, because if you know the parcel, then you know the guy's address in a hard source, you know a lot about him, and then how much of that do you restrict or how much do you combine up?
This is Adina. One more example of that granularity is the ability to get local data, or maybe it's even hyper-local data, about weather. There's nothing worse than getting the weather, say, in Boston if you're 30 or 40 miles away. But there are tools now where you can get it, you know, within a 4 mile or even smaller block just around you, which is another real granular, you know, can be very, very important if you're going to be playing golf at that location, for example. The other point I want to make about data, it certainly is ubiquitous, and we have to deal with these privacy issues. For my taste, we have not solved the how do I find the data that's out there being served by all these different web servers. Some are using standards, some aren't using standards. There are some tools that allow you to search some data, but that's a huge problem, and to take full advantage of it, we've got to get that one solved.
And I just get the feeling that one of these guys, whether it's Google or whoever, is going to try to tie it all together, and so that there will be a one-stop shop for all of your local data.
I wonder if that's the library, in a sense, or everything you want to know about anything at all. It's more than Wikipedia. It's this concentration of all things known to humankind. Kind of an interesting concept.
Yeah, I think we'll see more of this come into play next year. I mean, that's kind of the outlook that I see, is that there's going to be more of this convergence. And there'll be some surprises. Thanks, everyone, for listening today. We appreciate your time and tuning in. In closing, I want to mention again that the podcast is brought to you by the Location Intelligence Conference. Our theme is convergence, and some of the things that we've talked about today is bringing the elements of location technology from the consumer side, the enterprise side, and certainly from the software developers themselves into a common venue. And we hope you'll join us April 16th to 18th in San Francisco. This is Joe Francica, Editor-in-Chief of Directions Media. Thanks again for joining us. Be sure to tell a friend.